For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
So I'm very happy to have Tova here, and thank you for coming.
Good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to be here, and thank you very much, Taigen, for inviting me. It's my first trip to Chicago since I was a college student, so it's a long time ago, and much has changed. So this weekend was the big climate march in New York, and Taigen spoke about that very eloquently yesterday. So when I was thinking about what to speak about, and because I was coming here to chant with the ballet first, and that led to Taigen's invitation, I thought I would talk about chanting, and particularly chanting in troubled times. And as I thought about chanting, because it's something we do every morning at San Francisco Zen Center, I thought it would be interesting to explore what we chant and why we chant, and what is the meaning of this chanting that we do. We just chanted the Enmei Juku Kanon Gyo, and that's the chant that we did during the ballet, Raku, as Taigen mentioned. So I might start with the ballet and how the chant was used in the ballet. It's somewhat unusual to have a bunch of Zen students standing in the pit of the orchestra chanting in the middle of a ballet. And this came about, a few people have asked me how that happened. The composer of the score for this ballet is named Shinji Eshima. And he lives not very far from Green Gulch Farm in Marin County. He's a bass player, and he plays in the ballet and opera orchestras, and he's also a composer. And he's Japanese-American. His grandmother was a Jodo Shu Buddhist teacher. And he, until the time of the first performance of the ballet, had no connection with Zen Center. But he had a student named Paul Grantham at the San Francisco Conservatory, a bass student, who was very involved in San Francisco Zen Center. And when, I'm going to call him Shinji because that's what I call him, Shinji, was working on the score, he said to Paul, I'd like to have some chanting in the middle of the ballet. And Paul Grantham said, well, I know people who chant at Zen Center, let me introduce you. And at that time, Shinji had the idea of people chanting Om at a point in the ballet where he wanted compassion to be expressed. And so when he went to Zen Center and met with some of the Zen Center elders, Blanche Hartman, whom some of you may know, and Vicki Austin, they said, well, why not chant the Enmei Juku Kanon Gyo, because that's all about Kuan Yin and compassion. And Shinji decided that was the perfect thing to chant. So he embedded it in the score. And a group of us from Zen Center went and chanted it every performance. It was done two seasons in a row. And after that, it was performed in Washington, D.C., and at Covent Garden in London, and in Hamburg. And each time, there were Zen students who came to chant the Enmei Juku Kanon Gyo. So when Shinji said the Joffrey Ballet was going to chant it, I said, let's call Taigen and see if there are Zen students in Chicago who would like to chant it. So thanks to the wonderful organizational work that you did, Laurel, and including not only students from Ancient Dragon, but also from Utambara. And two of you are here tonight. Thanks for coming. And someone from St. Paul, and two of us from San Francisco. We had a group every night of 10 or 11 people chanting in the ballet. And I think over the time we chanted together, we became one voice. And I thought of us as like the violin section. You know, the violin section, they all play the same music, their bowings are exactly the same, they rehearse together, and it's that way for all the string sections in the orchestra. And so we were a section of the orchestra, that's how it seemed to me. And we listened for our cue and stood and then chanted. We only chanted it 2.5 times, but it seemed to, I don't know, for me it was timeless chanting there. And the conductor, Scott Speck, if he hasn't already been a Zen student, I think he will be, because he spoke with us each time before the ballet. He came over to us and bowed to us, and he would give us feedback about how we had done the night before and any suggestions what could be improved. But he was talking about being in the moment. And when we were chanting together, there was that sense of just chanting. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we chant. And I think chanting does help us transcend time, in that we're in the moment. When we're chanting, it's very hard to do anything else but chant. And you can bring the same focus that we bring to Zazen to chanting. And of course, the admonition I was given when I started learning Zen chanting was to chant with your ears, so that chanting involves listening very carefully, so that you're in not only in harmony in terms of pitch, but you're together rhythmically. And when somebody thinks the chanting is too slow or too fast and tries to change it, you can really hear suddenly there's a lot of disharmony, or sometimes even confusion. And if the chant is being accompanied by the mokugyo, the person playing the mokugyo has very hard time. But if we chant with our ears and chant together, it just can resonate through our bodies. I remember one practice period I did at Tassajara with Paul Haller, who was our abbot at the time. Paul loves chanting and has a very resonant voice. He had us chant the Enmei Juku Kanon Gyo for one whole period of Zazen, 40 minutes, so that I couldn't count it at some point. It just went on and on and on, and it really opened our voices. So many traditions include chanting, many religious traditions, and I think my first experience with chanting was actually as an anti-war activist in the 60s and 70s, and I, you know, that chant, what do we want? Peace. When do we want it? Now. You know, chanting. I had a very different feeling from the chanting that we do now, but the message was not so different. We want peace. And I found a wonderful book as I was preparing for this talk by Brother David Steindl-Rast called The Music of Silence. Entering the Sacred Space of Monastic Experience. It's a small book, but very beautiful book about Gregorian chant and chant. There's actually a CD that accompanies this with chants done over the course of a day by Benedictine monks. And in talking about chanting, Brother David says many things that are very familiar to me from our Zen tradition, and I thought I would share a few of them. He talks about how chanting is not a solo performance. So even when one person might chant alone and then others come in with a kind of call and response, chanting is a community, it creates community. And chant is not a solo performance, it's a choir performance. And it's the whole community that chants, not just specialized singers. So I would say most of us who are Zen students don't have any formal training in singing. But when we learn to be kokyo, or when we chant frequently, our voice becomes more open and resonant. And it's also not about performance. It's an inner experience. And Brother David says, we encounter a reality that is more real than what we experience in our daily busy lives. And it's a different kind of reality. It's of a way of tapping into a kind of timelessness that comes when we're totally in the moment. And rather than being so aware of linear time, and clock time, and that's very much in keeping with Dogen's teachings about time in Uji, that we are time beings, and that we only know this moment. The past and future are contained in each moment, and Brother David says that's the kind of time you can experience in chanting. So it's about entering the now, and chant music evokes a different relationship to time, one in which time, while precious, isn't scarce. It conjures the archetype of the monk's way of life, wherein time flows harmoniously. The time available is in proportion to the task at hand. And he says, the chant proclaims a harmony, wholeness, and healthiness that calls us to wake up from uneasy workaday scheming and tension, to let go of our wooden, publicly constructed self and drop down into our true self. Well, that's kind of a dichotomy that may not really apply to those of us. I mean, I think we try to bring our practice into our lives in a way that we can be present and awake moment to moment, no matter what we're doing. But chanting can help with that sense of presence. And and Brother David also says that chanting has no practical purpose. It's usually about celebration and praise, and it's tasting the joy and beauty of life. It also cultivates listening, and listening in a loving way. Although he says it has no practical purpose, I think we often chant, especially the Enmeijuku Kanangyo, at times like tonight when we've lost someone dear, or for people's well-being. Do you do a well-being ceremony?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Yes, we do that once a week at Zen Center, and we chant the Enmeijuku Kanangyo and the loving kindness meditation, and then we chant, the Kokyo will chant the names of people who are ill that our Sangha writes down. And I really think that makes a difference. It certainly makes a difference. You know, sometimes when you have a loved one who's ill, you kind of feel helpless. You know, that maybe that their illness is, it can be severe or unexpected. And it's often there's a real wish to be supportive, to be helpful. And, you know, I think certainly we can be present with someone who's ill or dying and bring that loving presence. But also when we chant for someone's well-being, my sense is we are doing something that's helpful and beneficial for that person. And people often now, some of our Zen Center wider Sangha, if they let us know that they're ill, they'll say, could you please put my name on the well-being ceremony list? And I know it means something to them to know that we're chanting for them. When Blanche Hartman's husband, Lou, was in hospice, he was there for several weeks, a group of Zen students would, he was across the street from San Francisco Zen Center in a building that's now the Zen Hospice building, and a group of us would go every day and chant the Enmeijuku Kanangyo. And it was really helpful for Blanche as well as for Lou. She looked forward to those times when we would go, and then near the end of his life, we had a 24-hour vigil, and a lot of the time we would chant. And I think he found it very comforting. So in thinking about why we chant, in addition to chanting for healing of individuals, we can also chant for the healing of communities and for the healing of the world. And part of that comes through the dedication at the end of the chant. So I was looking at the Soto School Scriptures for Daily Service and Practice, which is a beautiful accordion folded book. It's an oblong book. And Taigen, among other Zen teachers and scholars, helped translate and compile all the chants that are traditionally used in Japanese temples. And there's a little section that explains the meaning of the chants. And one of the purposes of chanting is to generate merit. In the daily sutra chanting services, and the echo, the dedication, is a verse for transferring the merit. So when we say, may the, let's see, may we awaken Buddha's compassion and luminous mirror wisdom. With full awareness, we have chanted whatever we chanted. We dedicate the merit to, and it can be, lately we've included in our dedication not only people who are ill, but all those who are victims of violence or war, or people incarcerated, you know, groups of people who we want to extend well-being to. And we can also do that to our planet. in this time of real crisis for our planet. So the main things that we chant are sutras like the Heart Sutra and Dharanis. I don't know if you chant the Sho Saimyo Kichijo Dharani for removing hindrance. There are a couple of Dharanis. The Daihi Shin Dharani is often chanted at memorial services. And it's almost impossible to translate them. They're magical spells, strings of sound that are deemed sacred and powerful, although they may not have any literal meaning. And I know that there are some students at Zen Center, and maybe some of you too, who feel uncomfortable chanting something if you don't understand the meaning of it, and that these cannot be translated. And so I feel over the years I've just developed a sense of appreciation for being able to chant something that has the power to remove hindrance, or that has some healing effect, or that expresses compassion without needing to know exactly what it means. And that's just as well, because there's no translation possible. So another ritual function of our chanting and dedication is the commemoration of our ancestors. And in the dedication today, there was our first Buddhist, the Shakyamuni Buddha, and then our first ancestor in China, first ancestor in Japan. We usually put in our first woman ancestor, Mahapajapati, and then our founder, Suzuki Roshi. So just remembering who came before us is really important part of our liturgy. And then chants are often used in kind of blessing everyday activity, like putting on our robes or the meal chant that we do. I don't know if you have formal meals here.
Yes, during our all-day sittings we do the meal chant, yes.
Yes, so those are chants that are done in monasteries in Japan. They're done in temples here, and it helps us to, I think, slow down and appreciate the food that we're receiving and the meaning of actually receiving the gift of this food, and appreciating where it comes from, all the labor. There was a chant we used to do, innumerable labors brought us this food. We should be aware of how it comes to us. And thinking about people who grew the food and how the food actually reached us and those who prepared the food and served the food. It's a real dependent co-arising, an expression of how interconnected we are. And I think chanting helps us feel that interconnectedness as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about another time when I experienced the healing power of chanting. It was almost 10 years ago, in 2005, when Chosen and Hogan Bays, who are the teachers at Great Vow Monastery in near Portland, Oregon, led a group of Zen students. It was a pilgrimage to Japan, to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, on the 60th anniversary of the bombings of those two places. And Chosen Bays, who was a pediatrician as well as a Zen teacher, was born on the day the U.S. bombed Nagasaki. So it was going to be her 60th birthday. And her parents were pacifists, so she grew up knowing, hearing about the bombings, and feeling that she wanted to do something to make amends. And she, I think partly because of her practice as a pediatrician, she really loves Jizo Bodhisattva, whose earth treasure store Bodhisattva, Bodhisattva who is often represented as a monk carrying a staff with six rings that jingle so that when Jizo walks, creatures can get out of the way and won't be stepped on, and also a wish-fulfilling jewel, which is really about the jewel in each of us. So Jizo has a great vow to save all beings, including beings who have died and gone to the different realms, and including the hell realm. And I think that's why Chosen and Hogan named their monastery Great Vow Monastery. And they have many, they have a Jizo garden. So this was a, they thought of this trip as a pilgrimage to visit Hiroshima and Nagasaki and be there on the anniversary of the bombings. And initially, Chosen thought she would bring 60 images of Jizo. But then a friend said to her, "Now, that's thinking too small. Why don't you bring one image of Jizo for each person who died in the first year after the bombings?" And that was 200, almost 300,000 images of Jizo. So she and the students at Great Vow set to work thinking about how they could do this. And they put together little kits. They were, decided to make Jizo prayer flags and to use small stamped Jizos that people could stamp onto cloth, and they specified the size of the cloth, and then color them and write on the bottom of each prayer flag the name of the person who made it, their age, where they practiced, or where they lived, and then a message for peace. And some of them had tiny photos attached as well. And they sent word about this project out very widely, and people all over the world started sending them prayer flags. And people in prison, people at companies like Microsoft, people in sitting groups, church groups, and they made some of these prayer flags into quilts, and they also folded origami Jizos so that by the time the group was ready to go, we all had some Jizos. I decided when I heard about this, I really wanted to go because I had been to Hiroshima and Nagasaki earlier as a peace activist, connecting with peace groups in Japan. But I wanted to go with a group of Buddhists, and this just seemed like such a wonderful opportunity. So
we did some of those Jizos here.
You
also
did them here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a wonderful project. And they all got taken to Japan in our suitcases. And there were a couple of places where we had exhibits of some of the prayer flags. And then at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we brought these garlands of Jizos, the way people bring garlands of paper cranes, and left them on the altars. We also gave them to people we met on streetcars, and we met in the peace parks, and we tied them around Jizo statues in various temples that we visited. And we learned to chant the Jizo Dharani. So the Jizo has a chant. And yeah, Taiga knows it. It's Om Ka Ka Kabisa Mai Soa Ka. I brought copies for everyone because I thought we might, at the end of my talk, we might chant it together. And so what Chosen says about this, she has a wonderful book called Jizo Bodhisattva. If you want to know more about Jizo, it's really rich in stories and practices about Jizo. Reciting the name of Jizo is a form of mantra or dharani practice. A mantra or dharani is a group of syllables whose recitation brings spiritual benefit. And she said a dharani is usually longer than a mantra. So the Jizo Dharani starts with Om, which is a mantra by itself and a common opening word in longer mantras. And it's Sanskrit. She says, to chant Om invokes our awareness of the presence of absolute perfection within the relative world of our everyday life activity. And then the chant ends with Svaha, which is also the end of, you know, Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasamgate, Bodhisvaha, the end of the Heart Sutra. And it means, so be it, or may it endure, or may good arise from this. And the syllables in between invoke Jizo Bodhisattva. And she says, the entire mantra thus helps us stop and become aware of the perfection of this moment. It asks that the energies of Jizo Bodhisattva enter our lives and ends with a confident benediction. It's short enough that we can memorize it. And so we did memorize it and we chanted it in different places. And one of the experiences that stands out for me is when we reached Nagasaki, we had a guide who was a Habaksha, a survivor of the bombing. He was in his 80s by that time. And he had devoted his life to peace education. And he took us to the various places where we stayed and where we had an exhibit of these quilts and some of the beautiful prayer flags in an art gallery. And then he took us to a couple of nursing homes where there were many survivors of the bombing who were now elderly and some of them were ill. And we brought little clay jizos to give to these people. And first, they gathered in a room, and we were introduced to them, and we chanted the jizo mantra 7 times. And then we just mingled with people and gave them the jizos, and many of them had tears in their eyes. They were just so appreciative that a group of Americans who had perpetrated this terrible thing were coming with apologies and gifts for them. And the jizos really touched them. They, you know, many of them had jizo statues near their bedsides. We got to walk in some of the rooms and visit people who couldn't come to the gathering because they were too weak. So that trip gave me a great appreciation for the power of chanting, and for Jizo Bodhisattva. And I think that, you know, the kind of chanting that we do, that's focused, that's harmonious, that is, whether people understand what we're chanting or not, it just has the power to help others feel our compassion and find some moments of rest and peace themselves in the midst of it. Just want to see if there's anything else that I haven't talked about. Yeah, there is. I wanted to talk about a little bit, how are we doing for time? I'll finish up in just a moment. The call and response quality of chanting, and I think we do that in the full moon ceremony. That's one of the times when there's the whole ceremony is call and response. But thinking about call and response in our lives, that, you know, as we learn to listen, which I think chanting helps us to do, as does Zazen, to listen when we hear someone who's needing help and we can find a way to respond from our own compassion. And I think about the koan about Kuan Yin, where the two Dharma brothers are talking and one asks the other, what does the Bodhisattva of compassion do with all those hands and arms and hands and eyes? Let's see.
Hands and eyes,
because each hand has an eye in it. Thank you. And the other one says it's like reaching back for a pillow in the night, which I think is just a wonderful, comforting image. And then the first one says, say more, can you tell me more about that? And his Dharma brother says, all over the body, hands and eyes. And then the first one says, well, you've got about 80%. And so the other brother says, what's missing? And the first one says, throughout the body, hands and eyes. And I think of that when we chant, you know, the chant resonates throughout our bodies. So throughout our body are the hands and eyes of compassion. It's not just on the surface, it goes through us, totally through us. And I think that kind of presence is what's really helpful to people who are suffering and can be so helpful to our suffering planet. You know, the first day I was here, Laurel invited me to go to the Field Museum with her, and we went to the exhibit that showed all the previous extinctions of life on Earth. Maybe some of you have seen it. It's a very powerful exhibit. And talking about this, it was about times when many, many species became extinct, and due to some of them due to huge climate changes, like, and one to volcanic activity, and one due to a large meteorite. And then the last room had the situation we're in now, which could lead to another mass extinction. And I think it was really good to see that just before the climate summit, and really appreciate your focus on that, Taigen. And just, I think, if we can bring that energy of compassion and no separation, you know, of being aware that we are totally connected to everyone around us and to our planet. And there's a song that I love by someone named Molly Scott, We Are All One Planet. And there's a line in it, she's talking about our planet, we live as she lives, we die as she dies. So can we bring our caring, our energy, our voices and our actions to help our beloved planet? So I think that's where I'd like to end, and perhaps we could chant the Jizo Dharani. I'll pass out copies of it, or the Jizo mantra. I think there are enough. There may not be enough for everybody. You can share. Yeah, that would be great.
Should we do this at the very end after some discussion?
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's.
So,
I think we
take some of these over tomorrow.
About 10 minutes?
Yeah, we'll have another little bit of time. But also, I wanted to ask Dave, as Kokyo tonight, you mentioned the well-being dedication, and we also have a long one. Could you please just read, not the names, but after the names, the things we have in our well-being dedication? Because some of you don't get to hear that because we do. We only have service Monday evenings and then on all day sittings. So, just for you, Tova, and for all of us, just the name after the names at the very end. Just recite that.
The last page.
After the bottom of the page.
Oh, after. Okay.
So we dedicate.
Victims of gun violence, Tassajara, the state of California, and all facing drought. People under drone attack, Mount Equity, Zendo, and all in the fracking zones. Lake Michigan and the Chicago River. People of Haiti. People of Africa. People of Japan. Peoples of the Mideast. People and other beings suffering from climate, radiation, and other environmental damage.
Thank you, Dave. So that's the end of our well-being dedication.
That's so beautiful.
As call and response, does anyone have response or calls for Tova? We have a little bit of time for discussion before we do our closing chant. Ken.
Thank you for your talk, Tova. And I have a question. I feel like some of the chants, and I don't know if it's the way it's said in English, but it sounds like the requests of someone, almost like a prayer. And I've played with who that's request is of, and I was just wondering what you...
The dedications we say may are equally...
Yes, or may the merit, who's keeping track of the merit? I mean, and I know there's the whole, there's all that complicated stuff. I guess my primary question, though, is sometimes, a lot of times I chant by myself, right? And so sometimes it feels like slowing, and sometimes it feels like coming into attention or awareness. But sometimes it does feel like almost like maybe my childhood Christian view of prayer, that I might be asking ancestors or myself or the collective or something, and I'm not sure how you hold chanting, if it's a request or anything like that.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. I think I'm not asking that from anyone or any... It's a wish, you know. You could call it a prayer. I'm not averse to the word prayer. I grew up in a Jewish background, and my family wasn't religious, but I go to synagogue now, and I try to figure out what prayers are meaningful to me in that tradition. But may our intention, if you think about our being interconnected, then that would be a request from our ancestors, from all beings in the 10 directions, from ourselves. Can we rise up to meet that request from one another? So I don't think it has any one particular meaning, and you may find it means different things to you at different times. But I think it's also really wonderful to chant alone, you know, to do it. So you may do a service at home or whatever it is you do. Oh, I forgot to mention something, but that's not related to your question. One time, my teacher, Linda Ruth, she tells of this story. She was she was swimming in the bay in San Francisco, which is very cold, and sometimes it's more turbulent than other times, and she realized that she was very tired and didn't know if she was going to make it back to shore. And she started chanting the refuges, and she said it really gave her strength. And another time she told a story of her daughter, Sarah, who was on her way to Colombia to bear witness in a town where they wanted some Westerners to be in the town because the town was attacked by different sides of the, by the government, by the rebel forces, anyway. And Sarah was going, and I think when Linda Ruth and her husband Steve were driving her to the airport, they were all concerned about her, and they chanted the Mmejuku Kanumbyo all the way to the airport. And she felt more equanimity when she got on the plane. So there are times when we chant in our own lives, or can chant, you know, when it can really be helpful to us. Even if we just think it's going to be helpful, you know, can we actually prove it? Well, it's hard to say.
Anybody else? Time for maybe one or two. Joanne.
I just had the thought when I was experiencing a lot of turmoil in my family with a particular family member, and I was asking Tai Yin for advice about what I could do, and he said, chant. And I found it extremely useful and comforting and great and wonderful. I actually gave them copies of the chant, and a little canon, you know, to just, they had no idea what I was doing, but just because, I don't know, anyway. So, I also know that my family members are on the list, and I really appreciate that, and she knows, and I think it's, I just think of it as, you know, sending positive energy to a situation that's really, really difficult, so I want to express my gratitude about that, and while the situation's getting better in some ways, it's also kind of worse in some ways, so I want to keep her on the list.
Oh yeah, she's still on the list, the whole family. There's at least half a dozen more people here who have people's names. Jerry.
That's interesting. When my sister was getting divorced, it was a really god-awful scene. And I chanted for her, and I think it helped. I mean, I didn't tell her I chanted because she would just think it's too weird, but... And I think it helped her. I mean, she started to, you know, get past it.
And I imagine it helped you as well.
Sandra.
I just wanted to say what a marvelous world we live in. I just saw you a few weeks ago. It seems like Tazahara sitting on a rock painting. It was wonderful to see you there. But it's very nice to have you here. And I was wondering, what's in Chicago, so I'm so happy to hear the story about the chanting of California. It's fabulous. I wish I could have heard it. There's a recording.
There is a recording. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's available online. Yeah. Maybe Laurel.
You could talk to Laurel.
If you go to the Joffrey Ballet website, you'll hear a talk that the conductor gave, you know, before the concert, and he talked a little bit about how important the chanting was to the actual ballet.
Oh, good.
That's online. I don't know how much of the music is online.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll look that up. And then for the chanting, I remember again at Tassajara, when I came for a war period, the first time I'd ever been to Tassajara, and really the first time I participated in longer Zen services, and it's like, here's the chant box, and just chant this. Really? Just chant that? I don't even know what it says. Why would I do that? And no one ever could tell me that the whole time I was there, nor did they try. So the English ones were okay, but you know, I just went, you know, okay, well, I'm here, so I was going to do this, I'll do the thing. Right? So, but it became more familiar. You know, I wasn't that concerned about what this meant, but I will say that I'm listening to San Francisco Zen Center live streams. I've noticed recently, when we first started doing that, at the beginning there would be the first thing the audience, the live stream audience would hear was this chanting going on, and this we don't do that anymore. It starts after the chant. But one of my friends said to me, it's a cult. Because, I mean, really, if you know nothing about Zen and you're tuning in for the first time, it's like very, I mean, yeah, it's very foreign. It seems very strange. So I think it does take some acclimation to, especially the non-English chants. I mean, you could say, oh, you know, well, it's very similar to, you know, singing in a Protestant church or any other kind of, you know, I think most religions probably have some aspect of chanting and things, but it is kind of a strange experience, the initial part of it. But.
Especially thank since we so start in Japanese. And then
exactly.
Yeah. There's a wonderful book by Shohaku Okamura called Living by Vow that explains a lot of the chants and just adds another whole nother dimension of understanding to them. So I would recommend that.
I just picked that up recently. Yeah.
So it's time to sort of stop formally, but there will be tea and cookies and a chance for conversation informally after this. But we usually close with the four bodhisattva vows that we chant three times. But instead, tonight, let's chant the Jizo Dharani. Maybe you could do it once for us, and then we'll do it seven times, just so we know the rhythm, or if you would start.
Okay, so the beat, do you want to do the Moku Yolo?
Yeah, okay. Do you know how fast you want it? Yeah.
Om ka ka kavi samae soaka.
Om ka ka kavi samae soaka. Om ka ka kavi samae soaka. Om ka ka kavi samae soaka. Om ka ka kavi samae soaka. Om ka ka kavi samae soaka. Om ka ka kavi samae soaka. Om ka ka kavi samae soaka.
So thank you very much, Tova, for coming and speaking to us and bringing the ballet to Chicago Zen and vice versa. And thank you all for being here.